And today's sermon actually marks something of a departure for me because this is the first time at Montclair Presbyterian Church when I've preached a sermon inspired by a passage from one of the letters of St. Paul. And it's a departure for me not just because Paul has a reputation for being somewhat moralistic and restrictive in his theology, and you here at Montclair Presbyterian Church have a reputation for being, well, Montclair Presbyterian Church. The truth is, I've never preached much from the letters of Paul, and that's, I don't know, I just haven't gotten around to it yet. During college and during seminary, I really took a deep interest in the study of the Old Testament, and I read and loved the Old Testament in college and seminary. So for the first maybe 15 years of my pastoral ministry, I preached primarily from the Old Testament, from passages like this morning's lesson from Ezekiel. But then, you know, a few years ago, I had sort of a come to Jesus moment when I realized I was a Christian pastor, so I needed to spend a little more time, as much as I loved the Old Testament, I needed to spend a little more time actually interacting with and understanding the stories of Jesus found in the gospel. And so I decided that I would preach on nothing but the gospel passages from the lectionary throughout a three-year cycle of the lectionary. And so I did that starting about seven years ago. The lectionary is a three-year cycle of suggested readings for use in worship. And so I did that. I preached only from the lectionary gospel readings for 3 years. And when I got to the end of that three-year cycle, I realized that I had become deeply in love with the gospel stories, the Jesus stories, and I needed to do another three-year cycle of preaching them. And so I did another three-year cycle and came to the end of that three-year cycle about 6 months ago and started again. And I suspect I'm going to finish this third cycle through the gospels. And then I may preach on Paul, because a few years ago I made the mistake of reading Albert Schweitzer's autobiography, in which he spends a whole chapter extolling the great virtues of Paul's spirituality and theology. And that got me a little curious to learn more about Paul, to learn what Paul has to say beyond the stereotypes of what Paul has to say. So someday I may actually preach on Paul, I may learn about Paul. And in planning out my sermons for this month, the month of January, I decided that I would combine 2 weeks of the lectionary readings together and preach on them next week, and that left a little opening. And in that opening, I thought, maybe I'll try preaching on Paul. I'll explore Paul just a little bit without embarking on that long-term project of delving into the letters of Paul in a systematic way. And so let me tell you at the outset, this being my first sermon from Paul for you, let me tell you what I love about St. Paul. Both as a church leader and as a writer, as the Christian Church's first real theologian, one of Paul's main contributions is that Paul helped the church become more welcoming and inclusive. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, but first I'm going to give you some background. The Bible, as you may know, as you probably know, the Bible is divided into two parts. What Christians call the Old Testament is actually the Jewish Bible, and then there's the New Testament, which is a collection of writings from the first 100 or so years after the life and death of Christ. The New Testament also is divided into sections, and different biblical scholars are divided on how they would divide the New Testament in different ways. But the two most important sections of the New Testament are the Gospels, which tell stories from the life of Jesus, and the letters, which are bits of correspondence usually written from a church leader to a congregation somewhere in the Mediterranean world. Most of the letters were either written by Paul or were ascribed to Paul by authors who were inspired by Paul. And as a result of his being so prolific a writer and so inspiring a theologian, Paul had a huge impact on the formation of the church. In fact, some people think that Paul actually had more of an influence on the early development of Christianity than did Jesus. And I'll have more of an opinion on that later if I ever decide to preach all the way through the writings of Paul. But for the time being, I can observe this. I can observe that Paul wrote his first letter to the Corinthians, the letter from which this morning's lesson was taken. Paul wrote this letter at a time when Christians were struggling with the question of how open and welcoming and inclusive the newly invented Christian religion would be. Some Jewish Christians wanted to keep Christianity a Jewish sect, and some non-Jewish Christians wanted to make Christianity a secret society, a Gnostic mystery religion, open only to the properly vetted and formally initiated. Paul advocated for a Christianity that didn't just welcome everybody. It welcomed everybody, but it didn't just welcome everybody. It needed everybody. And this morning's lesson from 1 Corinthians is a good example of this. A good example of Paul articulating a vision for a church that didn't just welcome everybody, but actually truly needed everyone. Paul wrote this letter to Christians living in the Greek city of Corinth, some of whom were Jewish, but most of whom were pagan converts. And while I'm no expert on first century Greco-Roman religious practice, I know that there were generally two kinds of religious practice. One was sort of the official temple worship of Greco-Roman gods, and I suspect that there tended to be kind of a top-down system in the temples. The other kind of religious practice was the Gnostic secret religious societies, which were popular at the time, and there was a definite hierarchy in those Gnostic secret religious societies, a hierarchy in which insiders were better than outsiders, and certain kind of insiders were even more inside than other insiders. And some of these hierarchical structures were starting to creep into the life of the predominantly non-Jewish churches around the Mediterranean, such that folks with certain gifts and abilities within the church were valued more than others. This was a time when the Christian faith was in the process of figuring itself out. And some people were practicing an ecstatic, mystic faith with utterances and strange languages and prophetic pronouncements and various attempts at working miracles, which may or may not have been successful. And a lot of Christians wanted to assign differing degrees of value, differing depths of membership even, to these different talents and abilities, thereby making the church perhaps a little more exclusive, perhaps a little less welcoming to newcomers and visitors and to those who didn't fit the mold or play by the rules. And Paul's response was to suggest to the congregation of the Corinthian Christians that they think of themselves as a body, each one a member, a body part. And sure, there are body parts that do more work. There are body parts that we think of as being more beautiful, body parts that we use more often, perhaps more than others, but every part is needed. Every part of the body would be missed if it were lost. Every part can be hurt in ways that cause pain for the whole body. It almost seems as if Paul's vision for the early church was inspired by Ezekiel's vision of a valley of dry bones. This is a passage that Paul would have known very well. In this vision, the prophet sees God bringing a crowd of dead folks back to life by attaching bone to bone and laying living tissue on those bones, and then breathing life into those dead bodies, which admittedly starts to sound like God raising up an army for the zombie apocalypse. But we'll let that slide, because I love the idea that the body of the church becomes whole when each of us is joined to the other, not just as welcome strangers, but as absolutely needed members. As God flushes us out, as God breathes life into us. This idea of Paul's that everyone is not just welcome, but in fact is a needed member in the body of the church, this is an idea which has evolved over the years, such that in the Protestant Reformation, John Calvin and his followers began to talk about everybody being needed, everybody having an equal role to play, not just in the church, but also in society. This is an idea that led to all sorts of revolutions, both spiritual and political, because before Calvin, most people's jobs, their roles in the economy, their status in society, this was determined by birth. If your father was a shoemaker and you were a boy, you would grow up to be a shoemaker, and if you were a girl, you would probably marry a shoemaker or, at most, a hat maker. But that was about it. Then the Reformation came along and had this radical idea that it was God and not birth which determined people's callings. So the shoemaker's son might be called to practice medicine, and the son of a lawyer might be called to teach high school. They still hadn't evolved enough to recognize that women could be called to non-domestic work. That came along about 3 centuries later, and when it did, it was part of the same evolution in which Paul was participating when he suggested that people with different gifts and abilities were all welcome and equal and absolutely needed in the church. Because we're all part of the same body, that body which has been created when God joins dry bone to dry bone and lays sinew on them and blows life into them. And I think the evolution is still an ongoing process. We're still changing, we're still growing, such that our faith is becoming more welcoming and more inclusive. And really, it's slow. No, it's happening faster than, say, a lichen evolving into an armadillo, but still, it's slow. And it never hurts to try to speed things up. Over the years, Christians have evolved to understand that lots of different people are not just welcome, but needed in the church and in society. The church has grown to understand its need for people of lots of different racial backgrounds and ethnicities, people who speak lots of different languages. We've grown to understand how much we need the voices of women, and we're starting to realize how much we need to be formed and led by gay men and lesbians. And I like to think that our congregation is well positioned to be on the vanguard of those who lead the church to recognize also its need for members who are bisexual and transgender, for people who inhabit the less densely populated places in the geography of human sexuality and gender identity. We evolve. And as we evolve, God is linking us bone to bone with a growing number of members of the body in which God breathes life. And I think it's really important for congregations like ours to explore the avant-garde in this evolution of inclusion. We need to be out scouting for all of the folks who we should be welcoming, not just because they need us, though they may need us, but because we need them. And it's important for us to be thinking and talking and dreaming about how we will evolve, because the evolution of inclusion always generates resistance, and therefore it needs the strength of our dreams. It needs the power of our imaginations. Paul's vision of a church in which all sorts of people are not just welcome, but really needed. That's an idea that met with resistance from folks who wanted to limit the membership of the church. Calvin's expansion of the idea to include the notion that the church didn't need spiritual gifts, but also temporal gifts as well, that idea was resisted by the wealthy and the well-positioned who worried about losing their privilege. The idea that the church needs the gifts of women in leadership, it's still an idea that's resisted by most Christians around the world. And the idea that the church desperately needs the participation from LGBTQ folk, globally, that's less popular still. The pushback can be fierce. People always are trying to stop evolution. But the rewards are great. The rewards are great unless you happen to prefer to live in a world in which everyone thinks the same and has all the same opinions and preferences, a world that is utterly predictable, well-ordered, a world without adventure or delight. If that's the kind of world you want, you might not appreciate the evolution of inclusion. But if you want to live in a world of wonder and joy and unexpected grace, please join me in figuring out who we can welcome next, who can be included, because we are a better people, a stronger community, a more functional church family when the doors open wide and everyone has a voice and a place, when dry bone is connected to dry bone and God fills our bodies with life. Amen.